You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. Nisiam, Nisiaya, Thinkum Queen Ansep, Hydra CM, Nisiam, Nisiaya, and the Skakuya,
Talitin, Homasquim, Astail. Hello, hello. You're listening to Fan Club on CITR 101.9 FM. And this week, we are going to be talking about the Oscar nominations that were released about a week ago. And Daniel and I are going to be talking about our favorite movies, two of our favorite movies, Y Tu Mama Tambien and The Last Black Man in San Francisco. And we also have a special guest in the studio today.
Woot woot.
Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Ruby. Very excited to be here.
Ruby is our Oscar nom correspondent.
Specialist
yeah. And correspondent. If I'm being completely honest, I haven't seen a lot of the movies this year. So we needed to bring in backup.
Yeah.
And that's who Ruby is.
Bring in backup.
So what are
to
your...
do a heist later.
Yeah. What are your impressions of the nominations this year?
My impressions of the nomination is... I mean, normally I'm like, oh, kind of the same old crew. Mm-hmm. But it does feel like there are some new faces this year. Like, I was excited by Brian Tyree Henry.
Yes. True.
Like,
I
that
love
was
him.
Exciting.
I would die.
And then
for him.
Obviously, like, the cast of Everything Everywhere All at Once was really cool.
To see all, like, pretty much the whole main cast nominated was really nice.
Yeah.
And I think that bodes pretty well for their chances.
I
on
totally
Oscar
agree.
Night.
I think also this year it feels like there's a lot of. Like, every year there's stories around why this person deserves the Oscar.
Yeah.
But, like, there's lots of heartwarming stories, like, with Brendan Fraser and, like, his comeback after being, like, shunned from Hollywood. And, you know, like, Michelle Yao working all these years and finally getting a nomination. So
yeah.
There's a lot of sort of, like, underdogs that have been nominated. And everyone loves a good underdog, right?
Yeah, definitely. I think, like, speaking of underdog, it is pretty cool or interesting, at least, that, like, I think for Best Actor, it's all, like, first-time mm-hmm. nominees. And kind of along the lines of what you're saying, I feel like there's always, like, a story when it comes to the Oscars and then kind of just, like, award shows in general. Like, for example, like, I feel like when it comes to the Grammys, the story is always, like, this artist was snubbed or, like, this
yeah.
artist was snubbed. But, like, for the Oscars, I feel like there was, like, I mean, obviously there's a few I would have loved to see nominated, like, shout out Viola Davis, shout out Nope. But I feel like this year I wasn't, like, angry. I was kind of mm-hmm. like, oh, like, all the movies I mm-hmm. liked are here
yeah.
kind of thing.
Well, there is, to go back to the Viola Davis thing, there
yeah.
is, like, that controversy with Andrea Riseborough.
Oh, like, for to Leslie. Yeah.
yeah.
Did
yeah.
you hear about that? Yeah.
And her getting nominated over the lead actresses in The Woman King and Till.
Yeah, Danielle, I can't remember her last name.
I can't remember her last
alliteration.
Name.
Alliteration. But yeah. Go for it.
But yeah, like the controversy of all of these actresses campaigning and, like, tweeting the same, like, few sentences about the film.
Mm-hmm.
So that sort of opens your eyes to, like, the real, like, business behind the Oscars and the campaigning and the money that is poured into it. I don't know. Have you guys seen anything about that?
I think they're like, accusing her of her campaigning being shady because mm-hmm. I don't think you're allowed to put your own personal money into campaigning, and there's, like, concern that she maybe did that, which I Ooh. Think is, like, what the, like, actual, like,
review is about,
serious critique it, like, mm-hmm. obviously also yeah the fact that, like, all these big actresses were snubbed and, like, this random indie movie that's, like, come out of nowhere and is all of a sudden getting all this critical acclaim mm-hmm. Is getting all this attention, but I think that's, like, the main big concern is that she may have used her own money to campaign.
Oh,
which is interesting. But I don't know how that, I don't know how that works, so
yeah.
I don't want to, allegedly.
Allegedly. Allegedly.
Yeah. I think I just have, like, two thoughts about the whole thing. I feel like on one hand, it is kind of, like, unfortunate that this, like, nominee was kind of propped up by all these, like, I don't know, like, rich and very, like, A-lister, like, actors and actresses, and we're like, oh, like, nominate her, and then kind of because of that, there was maybe, like, a slot that would have went to, like, Viola Davis or Danielle that mm. was kind of given to her. But then on the other hand, I feel like this year more than like any other year, and I don't know if that's just because I was like paying more attention to the Oscars or because like the Oscars are maybe a bigger thing in like my circle of friends or whatever, but I didn't realize just how much like the Oscars is very much like a campaign. Like studios host events, like they host screenings, like etc., like agents, companies, like movie companies and everything. So on one hand, it's like, yeah, it does kind of suck that like maybe this actress who maybe didn't deserve it in quotations as much as some other actresses got it, but at the same time, like, it kind of seems like she was also just campaigning like everybody else. So I'm a bit torn.
I think it's also like there's certain films that are like allowed to be nominated, right? Like Till was of the vein of one that would be, and same with The Woman King in terms of like,
yeah, Oscar,
it's like
prestige.
Studio films. And I googled, her name is Danielle Deadweiler.
Thank you, Deadweiler.
And so, yeah, when like this independent film comes up and like there are these like two other women, two other black women who like deserve this, it does seem a little shady.
Yeah.
Yeah. Honestly, my main reaction to all this is, sorry, I know you enjoyed this movie, Daniel. I very much thought Avatar was shockingly bad.
I knew
bad.
Avatar was coming. And one and a half stars on Letterboxd.
I can't believe it is nominated for Best Picture. Visuals, sure. Like, any technical awards, sure. But Best Picture, to me, is crazy, especially considering the mass snub of Nope across
bro,
all these awards.
Bro, Avatar deserved it, bro. Like, yeah. Bro, what do you mean,
blue
bro?
People, man. No, I don't know. Whatever, it's fine. I'm just very sad that Nope got so severely snubbed when it was so good and the performances were so great and it was so original. And like, if there was a big like IMAX movie to get nominated, because there's always like, you know, a big kind of, not, it's, I, it wasn't a blockbuster, but it was like very successful and was big budget. I thought Nope should have been the one.
Yeah. Do you have any like theories on maybe why it was, because it was shut out completely, and I thought if it got like, even if it, I thought it would get at least like a screenplay,
yeah, screenwriting, especially because Jordan Peele's won in the past. Yeah.
Exactly, like if he hadn't won for Get Out, then I would have been like, oh duh, but like there's an Oscar winning actor in it, like Daniel Kaluuya, an Oscar winning screenwriter, like Jordan Peele, like they've already had their in to the Oscars, so I'm surprised that they just got completely ignored.
And I feel like the technical aspects of the movie were pretty noteworthy too, like the cinematography and like the sound design. I feel like
yeah,
really
true.
Notable,
yeah,
in that movie.
Like sound was such a big one. And
yeah,
like, I'm just very surprised.
Nothing. So I don't know. Do you guys think there was like any particular reason? Was it just like they didn't campaign hard enough? Was it like,
I think it just happens sometimes.
Like it,
yeah, like, sometimes movies just like
they fall under.
It is all political, right? So I think that like, I wonder if the timing, like, what if it had come out later
in the
awards season? And, like, if we're also thinking about, like, the films that were of that vein of the blockbuster, like, Elvis is also up there. And there was so much talk about Austin Butler's performance as Elvis and
I
the
think
voice.
How I feel about Elvis is maybe not as, like, extreme as Isaiah feels about Avatar. But Elvis was, like, Elvis was fine. But I just, like, don't, I will never care that much about Elvis.
No,
and
me neither.
And I feel like I hated that, like, the black people in the movie were like, yes, please, like, you could totally, like, take my melodies and my flow, like, word for word, bar for bar, and you can take the credit for it. And I'm totally fine with it. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I feel like if I was Little Richard or whoever, whatever black singer Elvis was, like, profiting off of, I'd be like, bro, like, what the hell? Like, run me my check and my money and my fame. Anyway, I was just annoyed at that. And Tom Hanks was abysmal, in my opinion.
Tom Hanks took up so much time.
So much
and
time.
And
I
was like about him, basically.
I know. Yeah. And like, we didn't, nobody wanted that. Well,
nobody.
Like, nobody needed that. And for you to say like, oh yeah, like I don't care about Elvis. This was their opportunity to be like, this is why you should care about Elvis.
Yeah. But they focus on like his manager.
On the manager who's like the most irritating person ever.
And the voice.
They don't even, and it's just all like big flashes of images across the screen, and I'm like, I want a little bit more character from him.
The
like
editing was so disorienting, it was crazy. I don't know if I like hated it. Honestly, I didn't finish it because it was really long.
I felt like I was having a manic episode like put to film.
Definitely seems like a theater movie. But I mean, okay, definitely agree that I honestly didn't actually hate how they, like, addressed the race aspect of Elvis's success in it, because it was a norm of the time. Like, everyone covered people's songs. There was no, like, the ownership over music wasn't like it was like now. It is now. Like, there'd be, like, 100 versions of the same song done by different artists. But obviously, because he was a white guy who was doing this black music for the first time, he, like, found a lot of success. And, like, it's not right, but I don't think that the portrayal of, like, B.B. King and Little Richard being like, hey, man, whatever, is that...
That's fair.
...crazy? Just because, like, everyone was covering everyone's songs.
Yeah. I guess it was of the time. I just feel like when I was watching, I wanted to, like, reach through the screen and shake them and be like, no, like, don't give it away so easily.
Yeah.
But product of the time, I guess. But Austin Butler, I did think, was great in it. But also part of me is like, will he ever be able to get, like... like, will he be good in another movie if he
I
just sounds
so.
Like Elvis now?
He has the cosign from Denzel Washington himself, which is a crazy cosign.
Yeah.
That's how
unexpected cosign.
Yeah, because they did a play together. They did a play together. And the answer is obvious. So he just needs to get cast in a movie about Austin Butler where he relearns his original accent and then factory resets and goes back to being a Cali boy. So I think he'll just... It kind of makes sense. Like, he was talking in this accent for 3 years.
Yeah.
Like, prepping for the movie
and
shooting
it. Yeah,
it
makes total sense. Like, think about someone who, like, moves to a place with, like, their different dialect.
Yeah.
It's, like,
goofy,
you're going to mesh with how the people around you are speaking.
Maybe for his next movie, he just needs to watch his old, like, Zoe 101 footage for 3 hours and get him back on track.
Sharpay's Fabulous Adventure.
Exactly. I like him, though, so if he wins, I wouldn't be mad. Is there anyone who, like, if they won, you would be... upset or anyone
upset?
You think like doesn't deserve to win?
I mean, I haven't seen some of these performances, but I would like, I feel like there's no like, oh my gosh, how did he get nominated, or like, how did she get nominated?
There's some more boring choices, like Bill Nighy, like
for
Living.
Like
Living.
Bill Nighy's good, like Nighy, not Bill Nighy, Bill Nighy. Like, he's good.
Did you see it?
I haven't seen that, but I like him as an actor. But again, it's not a good story for him to win. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like a lot of the time the Oscars, like, follow... Like, remember when Jennifer Lawrence won for Silver Linings Playbook? Like, that was just because she became this huge star from The Hunger Games, right? Like, she wasn't really winning
she
for Silver Linings Playbook. She was winning in popular opinion.
Yeah.
So I feel like that would be kind of a boring win.
I'm rooting for
Barry Keoghan.
Keoghan, is that how you say it?
I think so.
I'm so sorry, Barry.
Barry.
Mr. Barry.
I've been saying Keoghan, but...
It's Irish, so
Keoghan.
You never know.
Cohan.
But, yeah, ever since he's existed, I've been a fan. Mm. I really like him, so I'm happy he's, like, so successful now. Or if Ki Hyu Kwan won, that'd be awesome, too. But I don't think they'll give it to him.
You don't?
Really?
I
feel like
I think,
he has,
like,
the
he's
biggest
win.
Story.
He's
been sweeping.
Honestly, if any... I haven't seen the Fablemans, but honestly, if any of these people win for acting and supporting role, I'd be pretty happy for them.
Judd Hirsch's performance, I did see The Fablemans. It was really good. It was fun. Like, you know when you're watching a performance and you're like, I'm like
enjoying.
Just so entertained right now?
Yeah.
That's, it was so like dramatic in a non-melodramatic way.
Yeah.
So I really liked his performance. Like, it had this twinge of humor in it.
Is he the bully?
No, he's like the old uncle.
He's the old uncle.
Yeah, and I love that he like kind of doesn't you don't see him again
for
the rest of the
like
movie.
Two scenes.
Yeah, does
and
his
he's
little,
so intense.
Yeah, does his little like shakedown of like Steven Spielberg as a boy, and then like dips, and you don't see it again. I love it.
But Ki Hyu Kwan was my favorite part of Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Yeah.
Like,
same.
I fell in love with him. He was so sweet, and like just like you can tell. To play a character that sweet, like the person themselves, I feel like has to have an element of sweetness. Mm. So I feel like that's also why I'm rooting for him. And did you see that thing where he went to Brendan Fraser and he was like, we're still here.
Yeah, that was very
like,
cute.
That was so cute.
I love
it. So
him.
I'm really rooting for him in terms of actor in a supporting role. What about actor in a lead role? Who are you guys rooting for?
I am rooting for, I mean, I love Colin Farrell. Honestly, any of them could win and I'd be like, good, cool for them. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm not like super attached.
Right.
I'm gunning for Colin Farrell, and I think he'll get it, to be honest.
Yeah.
He's won before, right?
I don't think so. I think this is his first time being nominated.
Really?
I think he's...
I feel like he's won.
For The Lobster, was he nominated?
I don't know, but I feel like it's all, because I feel like I read Best Lead Actor, it was all like first time nominees for Oscars.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, and like 16 of the like 22 nominees are all first time nominees, which is pretty crazy.
That is kind of cool, because that's what I was saying before about how it feels like there's a lot of, like, it's not
new
just
talent.
It's not like Amy Adams, you know,
Meryl Streep.
Which was one thing.
Yeah. Give her an Oscar.
Give her a pity Oscar.
I mean, they're giving like Jamie Lee Curtis one. I don't know. Why is she nominated?
Yeah.
She's good, but
we were just talking about that.
Should we get into it briefly?
Why don't we touch on it?
Yeah. Well, essentially, Ruby and I, before the show, we were talking about, like, or at least I was talking about how I had seen some stuff online, and personally, it felt weird that it seemed like Jamie Lee Curtis was like the supporting actress front runner for Everything Everywhere instead of like Stephanie Hsu, when I feel like Stephanie Hsu's supporting role was much more like significant than Jamie Lee Curtis. And we were kind of talking about, while Jamie Lee Curtis is this like movie star that's been around forever, she's a Nepo baby. Is it just because she's kind of like maybe more?
It's a career Oscar. It's just like a nod. They're you've done well.
Exactly.
Which
one
I
that
enjoy.
Amy Adams will get one day.
Yeah. It's like even
for Enchanted
like,
3,
I
like she's coming for it. Sorry.
Yeah. No, it's okay. Like even Leo's Oscar, like I like The Revenant, but there's probably like other movies that he could have definitely won for before, but they're like, it's your time.
Yeah.
They just, you know.
One thing I wanted to bring up too, how do we feel about, I feel like there's kind of like this talked about race for lead actress, and it's kind of like between Michelle Yeoh and Cate Blanchett. How do we feel about that?
So I am all the way for Michelle Yeoh. Like, I just feel like her presence in the industry all these years, like her win is going to be so much more significant
than
Cate Blanchett.
I agree.
And I feel like at this point, if the Oscars is just something that, like, is bought or is political, like, why not make change with it if it's, like, fake anyways? You know what I mean? But, like, its consequences are real. Does that make sense?
I agree. What do you think? I see it.
I mean, I haven't seen Tar, so I can't really speak to Kate's performance in it. But, I mean, Michelle Yeoh definitely, like, just deserves it on performance and, like, merit alone, I think. As for her performance in Everything Everywhere All at Once. So I'd be happy if she got it. The only nomination here that I'm like, what is Ana de Armas?
Oh my God.
I don't even want to get into it.
I know. I was like honestly trying to skip around that, but I too was like, why are you here? Why are we giving any attention to Blonde?
Yeah.
Did you two watch it?
I didn't want to watch it. It's like cruel to Marilyn Monroe that they made that movie.
I saw many a video essay about it, so I didn't feel like I needed to watch it.
I just heard like she talks to her.
It was pro-life. And like also Marilyn had issues with infertility, so the fact that they put this abortion scene when this never anyways, we're not getting into it. But
we're not getting into
it. Let's skip over it.
Michelle Yeoh is how I feel Michelle too. Because Kate was great in Tar, to the point where I thought Lydia Tár was a real person. Part of that was because I didn't know what the movie was about when I started watching it. But like she was great. But I agree with you, Ruby. Like I feel like if we're going off of like the understanding that like the Oscars aren't necessarily just awarding things off of merit anymore, I think they are, but like obviously it's very like political too. It's definitely a mix.
Yeah,
I feel like in terms of like the best story, like the best performance, and the best like just potential of the most exciting win for me is like Michelle Yeoh.
Yeah,
and one thing I forgot to mention too, and I know we're kind of running out of time on the Oscar nomination stuff, but like, I feel like I don't know if it would be like pinpointed to Parasite maybe, but I feel like after Parasite won, I feel like there was maybe this understanding that was just like, okay, we don't have to pick like the most boring picks anymore, or we don't have to pick like the most standard things, like we can like something like Everything Everywhere All at Once, like being nominated for 11 Oscars is like kind of crazy to me.
Well, I feel like the Academy was like actually listening to like the public and like the audience, you know. And I feel like that, like, I honestly felt kind of seen by the fact that Everything Everywhere All at Once was nominated.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, like, they're listening to the audience?
They get it.
I didn't know they did that.
Yeah. It felt like they were much more, this year at least, than, like, past years. They were more, like, in touch with
Yeah.
Like what people cared about and enjoyed, at least. Yeah. So maybe that's why The Way of Water is there, even though you hated it.
James Cameron has something on the Academy that we don't know because I don't understand it. But that's fine. The people liked it. Any closing statements on the Oscars nominations?
I think if Ki Hoo Kwan wins, which I really hope he does, and I feel like he might because he's kind of been picking up Best Supporting Actor wins left and right, I feel like I will cry.
Mm. Yeah,
I will fall to my knees in happiness. And I'd love to see Michelle win. Yeah. And I'd love, love, love to see Everything Everywhere All at Once win. Because I feel like that kind of ties to what we were talking about last week when it was like, oh, we feel like it's only like established IPs that like do very well at the box office or whatever. And I feel like Everything Everywhere was kind of like that beacon of hope that's like, oh, we can put like weird stuff in movies and have like crazy ideas where there's like
everything
butt plug
bagels.
Fights. Yeah, and everything bagels. And it gets nominated for Best Picture and is like a box office hit.
Yeah.
That's my closing thought.
My closing thought is justice for Sarah Pauly.
I did not see Women Talking. I'm so sorry.
I haven't seen Women Talking
just
either.
Still, like, no women. Like, it was nominated for Best Picture, but not Best Director.
Did you see it?
I'm going to see it next week.
Oh, okay. But yeah, the Best Director is very much a, it's all men.
Again.
Yeah, again.
It'd be like that.
Yeah.
Maybe next year.
Also, I really want Marcel the Shell with Shoes On to win, but Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio is going to win.
I thought that movie was like really good and everything, but
Pinocchio or Marcel?
Both of them. Mm-hmm. I've actually seen all the best animated films except for The Sea Beast, but I'm gunning for Puss in Boots, The Last Wish.
What?
No, wait. Wow, what a curveball.
Go watch it and then come back.
Okay, because, we'll come back and talk about Puss in Boots in a couple weeks.
Justice for Puss in Boots, The Last Wish. Like, it's so good. But anyway.
I'm like really excited to see it.
Go see it. I cried. I liked it more than Avatar. But wow. Anyway.
Low bar.
Yeah.
And it cleared.
Okay. Thank you for listening to our Oscar nomination roundup react
discussion
content. You're listening to Fan Club on CITR 101.9 FM. I'm going to play some ads. And a song, and then we are going to talk about my favorite movie, Y Tu Mama Tambien.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded, Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Slice of Life Art and Gift Shop is Vancouver's choicest destination for one-of-a-kind artist-made prints, posters, screen prints, riso prints, paintings, acrylic paintings, watercolor paintings, ceramic mugs, ceramic plates, ceramic bowls, ceramic pots, lapel pins, hats, toques, crochet bathing suits, jewelry, trinkets, knickknacks, hand-painted signs, curated thrift, and a bunch more stuff that won't fit in this designated block of airtime. Slice of Life Art and Gift Shop, located at 1636 Venables, just off Commercial. Open 11 to 6, 6 days a week.
If you're out there and you are wearing a patterned sweater, Bluntstones and thrifted jeans in the front left of Psych 102. Meet me February 2nd at 8 p.m. at CITR Station in the AMS Nest to get to know each other better over some $3 beers and cool local bands. Show me that chivalry is not dead.
CITR wants to broadcast our love for you by putting on a live show at the CITR Station on February 2nd at 7:30 p.m. This will be the official Fun Drive kickoff show. Tickets are only $5, drinks are cheap, and we have four amazing local bands performing. Nonarchy, Magnolia, Punching Knives, and Cat Larceny.
Thank you. stuck by this river, you and I, underneath the sky that's ever falling down, 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 ever falling down. Through the day, as if on an ocean, waiting here, always failing to remember why we came. I wonder why we came.
Hello, hello. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM. This is Fan Club. And today, me and Daniel are going to talk about our favorite movies. Mine was E.T. Mama Tambien. His was The Last Black Man in San Francisco. And we thought watching these movies would be a good way for us to get to know each other better and also for you guys to get to know us better. So starting with E.T. Mama Tambien, what did you think?
Firstly, I definitely need to rewatch because after discussing with Isia, I realized there was a lot of things that went over my head.
Like the central, one of the central plot points in the film.
Are we discussing spoilers?
Spoiler alert. Also, before we move on, I forgot to mention the song we just heard was By This River by Brian Eno, which plays in the movie, which I also just think is a really great song. But yeah,
it's continue. Great song.
Spoiler alert ahead.
Spoilers ahead. But yeah, I guess I completely missed that, like, what's her name?
Luisa,
like, passes away at the end, and I think I just, like, did not catch on. And I was like, oh, she's just acting, like, silly and goofy because her, like, husband was cheating on her, and she wants to, like, live young, wild, and free. No Bruno Mars.
No. Yeah. She's dying.
Yeah.
Which makes the movie make a lot more sense.
Yes.
In my opinion. Because the whole time, even though I know what happens because I've seen it like 4 times, every time I watch it, I'm like, this woman, why is she doing this? This is crazy. Why is she hanging out with these 2 young boys? But then I'm like, oh yeah, she's going to die in a month.
So. Now it makes a lot of sense. I did, apart from misunderstanding that or not catching that, I still did really enjoy it. I feel like one thing we've talked about and maybe one thing that even like sparked the idea of doing this show was that I really love, and I think you said you really love as well, Isia, like character-driven movies where the plot isn't necessarily like super intricate or complex, but you kind of are just following these characters and their lives, and by the end they have grown or changed in some way, and I really like movies like that. And then another aspect of this movie I really liked was just how like natural and like free-flowing the characters moved. Like, I don't know, they were just so like... I don't know. They just seemed like they were just, I don't really know. They just seemed like they were living and you were like watching them live and like you weren't necessarily watching like the plot happen to them or anything. You were just watching like a vignette or like vignettes of their life. And I always enjoy movies like that.
Me too. I think one of the aspects of Alfonso Cuarón and just like all the movies that he makes is something that he's really good at, like highlighting, is kind of like the background and like the world that's going on around the characters in the movie. And the best part of Y Tu Mamá También to me is that on the surface, it's about, you know, two young teenage boys and all they care about is sex and partying. And they go on this road trip with this beautiful woman, mainly because they think she's beautiful and they haven't really thought much past that. And like, you know, it's silly. There's lots of like sex scenes and they're really crude and like, I don't know, dumb boys. But once it's like placed in the context of like what's going on in Mexico at the time and like the political changes that are happening, and the like narration that Alfonso like incorporated into the movie where it like the sound completely cuts out, then he'll explain.
I loved that, actually. I loved the narration.
Yeah, he'll like give some context on just like a side character that walks through the frame, or like what happened in the area they were in like 3 months ago, or like what's about to happen to the space they're in because of like gentrification. And it like makes a story that's so personal, like quite political, which I think is really interesting because I don't think a lot of movies explore how the personal is political in like a very nuanced and subtle way. So, and that's what like really stays with me about the movie is the narration more than like the sex scenes and like how hot they all are, which is usually
which is a lot,
which is they're very hot. but it isn't what like brings me back to the movie over and over again, you know?
What is your take on like the two boys' little smooch at the end?
I don't know. Like, I don't really, for some reason, like, I don't know, the whole movie, you watch it and you know that they're going to kiss because it's just homoerotic the whole way through. But to me, it's like, that's not the part of their relationship that's the most interesting to me. It's the fact that, like, obviously Tenoch's character is, like, rich dad in politics and he's, like, super well off, and Julio is more, like, middle class. And I think it's interesting how that bleeds into their relationship and their conflict as the movie goes on. Like, you know, when they get into a fight, Tenoch calls Julio low class and, like, Julio calls Tenoch a preppy. And I thought it was just like a really interesting exploration of classism because, you know, when people fight, they're like trying to hurt each other and like hurt each other's feelings. And it's like crazy that Tenoch stoops so low to like call Julio low class. And like, I don't know. I just thought that was very, that was the part of their relationship that I found the most fascinating.
No, that's a really good point. And to be honest, a lot of like the class stuff kind of went over my head because I feel like from the first scene, I was like, oh, these boys are definitely going to like go at it by the end. And I was like just waiting for it to happen. But yeah, I thought that was really interesting to, I thought it was interesting how they were just like boys. And I feel like I thought like the little smoochy part and I guess a lot of like the sexual stuff was kind of, to me, interesting how like just carefree and everything they were with like exploring themselves and stuff, but then when it came back to the end of the day, they were like both from different worlds, and that's why they like never see each other again, which is how the movie ends for those listening.
And there's a lot of like parallels that people draw between like the coming of age story that they're going through and then also the coming of age in like Mexico as a country. Like the student protests are happening, and like by the end of the movie, the ruling party, like they mention it quickly that the ruling party, who was in power for like 70 years, finally loses, and like all these things are changing. But these guys, these boys have such a tunnel vision about like basically just getting as much pleasure and like having as much fun as they can. Like even the scene where they go to the protest to like ask one of their sisters to get the car so they can use it for the road trip. It's like they have no awareness of this massive student protest that's going on around them. They're just like, can I have the car so I can go on a road trip with a hot woman? Like, that's what their goal is. Even though, like, all this crazy stuff is happening around them, which is real because a lot of people don't really care.
Don't care, yeah.
Especially when you're, like, 17 or 18.
And
you know?
Rich.
Well, and rich. Yeah. In either cases.
Yeah, in one of their cases. I do have a question for you, Isia. Because you said earlier today, like, oh, you didn't, like, realize it was your favorite movie, but now you're like, oh, it's my favorite movie, I love it so much. So, like, what about it kind of, like, makes it so special to you or important?
I don't know if... I still don't know if I can say it's absolutely my favorite movie, but one aspect of it that makes it really great to me is that I love showing it to people and watching it with people. And it's just, like, it's entertaining. Like, on the surface, it's entertaining. The first time I saw it, like, same as you, like, what I took away mostly, like, I didn't really think about the political side of it as much. Like, I understood that they were saying something, but I didn't know what they were saying. And, like, every time I watch it, I get more from it. But also still on the surface, it's, like, just fun to watch and, like, fun to yell at your TV and be like, what are you doing? Like, just be like, oh, these boys are so dumb. but they're going through it. And, like, and the ending, okay, I just need to mention the, whenever a movie, like, you know, mentions this name of the movie in the dialogue, it's always
what are
like,
we, some kind of E2 Mama Tambien or something?
What?
You've never seen that meme where it's like, what are we, some kind of Guardians of the Galaxy?
I'm sorry for
I
not
getting
I butchered
it, though. It's okay.
I'm sorry.
I didn't say it correctly. It's fine.
Yeah, the name drop is like one of the, I think it's like the best name drop that I've seen, where basically they've put aside all their differences, the fact that they've slept with each other's girlfriends, the fact that they were beefing this whole time, and one of them admits to the other that he slept with his mother, his friend's mother, and but in the sentence it's, and your mother too, which in Spanish is y tu mama también. It's like so, like, Alfonso, you're so goofy. I can't believe you made that the name
silly
of your movie.
King.
Y tu mama también. Yeah. Like, it's so silly.
Do you see, like, influences of Y tu mama también in, like, movies that have come out?
The
after?
One scene that I'm like, that was so Moonlight, was when she's holding the kid in the ocean and he's she's, like, floating around in the ocean. I'm like, isn't that, like, I'm like, I'm sure Barry Jenkins just got that from this.
That's
like,
a really cool
take. It feels
take
like
on
it's,
it.
Like, a direct reference to me.
But no, I see that. That's a really cool reference, because when I read about that scene, it was like Barry Jenkins was like, oh, I thought it would be so, like, powerful to have, like, a black man teaching, like, a black boy how to swim, because, like, one of the stereotypes is, like, oh, black people can't swim or whatever. But I feel like it could be also very intentional that he takes, like, kind of the themes or whatever that are associated with that scene in Y tu mama también and, like, places it on Moonlight, if that made sense.
Yeah. And it's also just a common, like, the ocean is rebirth and blah, blah, blah. So, like, it's that's also just, like, common symbolism. But I'm surprised. I mean, I guess because the narration is so distinct and unique, like, you couldn't really utilize it without it looking like a direct rip from Y tu mama también. But I haven't seen narration done like that anywhere else.
The last thing I watched that had narration was, like, Fleischman Is in Trouble, if you've ever heard of that show.
I have not.
It's like a miniseries based off a book. It's fine. It's just about, like, Jesse Eisenberg, like, being the worst. But
like, he is in every movie he stars in.
Really, every film. But, I like that. Like, watching Y tu mama también kind of helped me realize I actually really like narration in movies, mostly because sometimes I'm a dumb movie viewer, and also because for some reason I just find it, like, very calming, and it's almost, like, adds, like, a literary aspect for me to, like, a film. But...
Yeah, when done well, it's, like, an amazing tool. Do you have any parting words on Y tu mama también? Because we need to talk about your movie.
My movie. I definitely need to watch it again. I apologize to Alfonso Cuarón that I thought it was directed by Luca Guadagnino at
first. Literally Italian. That man is literally Italian.
That was my mistake. But, I thought it was a great movie. I'm excited to rewatch. And just that... Alfonso has such an eclectic, like, filmography. Like, this man also made Gravity, which is insane to me.
Yeah,
but...
Gravity, Children of Men, Roma, Y tu mama también, The Prisoner of Azkaban. His roster is crazy, and it's all completely different. I guess Roma and Y tu mama también are probably the most similar thematically and, like, setting, obviously. But I love him. Shout out to that guy. Also, he made, like, a bad adaptation of, like... Sense and Sensibility. I don't know. He made a bad adaptation, but he regrets it, so it doesn't count. Anyways.
Y tu mama también.
Y tu mama también. Okay. I'm going to play some ads, and then we'll be back talking about The Last Black Man in San Francisco.
We all know that the word jazz means many different things to many different people, so check out the real deal on The Jazz Show at CITR 101.9 FM or CITR.ca for live streaming. Yours truly, Gavin Walker, is your host, and I guarantee the straight goods of 3 hours of jazz at its finest. The jazz feature that focuses on a concept, an album, or an individual artist will be heard at the beginning of the show every Monday night, right at 9 p.m., after our opening theme and announcement. So come on by and give your ears a musical workout, 9 p.m. Mondays. Don't miss it.
Radio show
is brewed fresh and served fresh at the peak of its flavor. If you're a tough customer, only the taste of this
radio show
will do. So go ahead, let Dunkin' Donuts make your
radio experience
exquisite
indeed.
Dunkin' Donuts, serving sweet treats from the pop underground, Thursdays noon to 1.
Hello, hello. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM. This is Fan Club with Isia and Daniel.
That's him.
And we've been talking about two of our favorite movies. We just talked about Y Tu Mama Tambien, Alfonso Cuarón's movie, which was my favorite. And now we're going to be talking about Daniel's, which is The Last Black Man in San Francisco. Why do you enjoy this movie so much?
Yeah, I really love it. Just for anyone who hasn't seen it, The Last Black Man in San Francisco is essentially about these two best friends, like Jimmy and Mont, and they're trying to like reclaim this house built by like Jimmy's grandfather, and it takes them on like this odyssey through like the past and present and future, and it's all kind of set against the backdrop of like San Francisco and like the gentrification that's going on. And I think why it's my favorite movie is like not like super complex. I think I just like haven't seen that many movies with black people that are kind of like quirky and weird and shy and like have weird interests, and not to be like, oh, that's so me, I'm like quirky and goofy or whatever, but I think it was just like one of the first movies I've seen that was kind of had a more like slice of life vibe, but it was still very much like racialized in how it was following black characters, which is sometimes nice to see, because I feel like a lot of like the movies starring black people I've seen, even if you think about this year, like the biggest
biopic.
Yeah, are like biopic or like
struggle.
Till or The Woman King. Yeah, yeah, or some kind of like struggle or whatever. So it was really nice to see just like a nice, like not like coming of age movie, but like just a nice like character driven drama that's like fun and comforting to watch that like is focused on black people, because I feel like we don't really have a lot of those. And if there are a lot of them, maybe I've been sleeping on them. But yeah, I think that's the main reason why I like it. And I just love Jonathan Majors.
Yeah, he's so good in it. He's like the shining star of the movie. He was so good that sometimes when Jimmy fails, like whenever there was an emotional scene with Jimmy fails, I'm like, it's falling short because
Jonathan is not on the screen.
Jonathan Majors is just so good. Like, I don't know. And I feel like his character could have easily become very... like,
one
I don't
note.
Know. Yeah, one note, and just like, he's quirky and neurodivergent coded, but like, he gave a lot of dimension to it, and he was like a real person, and I thought it was really good.
Yeah. What's your take on the movie?
I liked it. I really need to see it again to like truly process what happened.
Because you watched it like last night.
I watched it last night, which I don't think is enough time for it to like ruminate in my brain, but. Like first impressions, obviously it's beautiful, like it's super stylish, and like I don't know, just all the primary colors in the movie just stood out really well. And like Joe Talbot, the director, yeah. He does a really good job of just like the way he presents this home in San Francisco. It's like so beautiful. And like you understand Jimmy's obsession with it. I was a bit I was like, oh, a white guy directed this? Interesting. I was like, interesting.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
I did not know
that. Fascinating. But Jimmy Fails, who is the main character, he helped
write the story.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like based off of his personal life and like him growing up in San Francisco and kind of being pushed out by gentrification. So then I was a bit less judgy. But for a moment, I was like, interesting. This white director made this movie.
Joe Talbot sounds like a black man to me, in my defense.
That's how he got you. tricked you.
It's the Talbot.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know. There's a lot of like meat in the movie. There's a lot to like figure out.
Yeah.
Like I was not, I mean, I understood what they're trying to say about black masculinity, but I don't know. It was interesting. Just like the whole, like the group of dudes who hung out in front of his house and like one of them dies and due to gang violence. And like, I feel like I understood what they were saying, but maybe there's a bit more there that I didn't pick up on yet.
Yeah, I think if there's honestly one aspect I don't love about the movie, it was that. It felt very like dichotomous where like, oh, you're either like sensible, you're either like a sensible and quiet, quirky black man, or you're like this, like
just super aggressive, like then it's like, but they cry too. I don't know.
Yeah. That part didn't land super well for me, but yeah, I agree with you. What did you think they were trying to say there?
That's what I was trying to figure out, if it was just that and then like, you know, Mont has to like practice being that and like performing that masculinity in the mirror to like emulate their story. I found the movie very stressful, first of all. Like, I enjoyed it, but you know, he's like basically trespassing and squatting throughout the whole thing.
Yes.
At every moment, I was like, oh my God, they're going to get him. Like,
the scenery's like at the beginning where he's like painting or something on like the house, and there's like the couple throwing like the old woman throwing like fruit at him or something. That like stressed me out so much because like, yes, there's movies where there's like these huge like life or death stakes, but nothing stresses me out more than like a movie character doing something they're not supposed to do, and they're like, the person is going to catch them any second, and then like the person catches him. And I was so stressed out by that. Anyway, little aside, but
yeah. And I thought that was an interesting part of the movie, was just like how they portrayed like these like white liberal San Francisco dwellers.
We're not gonna call the cops.
Yeah, they always they're like, oh, we're not gonna call the cops, but they brought up the cops, so it's kind of like, I could use this against you, but I'm not going to, because I'm so cool.
Yeah,
but I will mention them in
just
case,
so you
this
know
goes too
I
far.
Have the power to call the cops.
Yeah, so I thought that they like did a good job of portraying that whole vibe that I feel like probably a lot of people moving into these like $4 million San Francisco homes like portray. But I don't know. And it was also like, I'm not sure what the actual, obviously it's like displaying gentrification like very clearly and like what it does to people and how they're pushed out of their communities. But I'm not sure what the takeaway was like under it all, because they kind of frame it as this like personal affliction that he has to get over, like letting go of his childhood home. They're like, just let go. Like, it was never yours. It was just ours for a bit. And, like, now time has moved on. But it's, like, still pretty depressing. Like, he's houseless. And, like, his, I don't know, his family lost their home, their beautiful home. It's, like, so grand. And it's, like, such a loss. So I understand why he's so obsessed with it. But I don't know.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. Like, are you saying them kind of almost saying, like, oh, you just have to get over it, was almost like gentrification is, like, a way of life. You can't defeat it kind of thing? Or, like,
like, kind of. Like, I don't think it was that bad, because obviously they're saying it's a bad, like, it's obviously, like, a bad thing, and they're obviously portraying it as this, like, even the shot at the beginning when they're skateboarding, it's all those, like, slow-mo shots of people downtown kind of looking at them with disgust. Like, they're obviously, like,
and the little girl, like, and then there's, like, a hazmat suit guy, like, behind her or something.
Yeah, like, all those, like, I don't think Joe Talbot is, I don't think he's like, gentrification is whatever. Like, he's obviously like, it's bad.
Yeah.
But I don't know what he's trying to say past that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, as someone who's been to San Francisco, there are more than two black men. So hopefully you can take comfort that he's not the last black man in San Francisco.
Yeah. True. But I went there recently and it was interesting. Like, I mean, never mind. I don't want to go on such a tangent. But yeah, I definitely need to see it again to process a bit more.
That's fair.
The reviews I read were very polarizing, mostly really good reviews, but I saw a couple like...
Oh, what were the polarizing
reviews? It was people who just really hated how they displayed gentrification and thought it was like too, like, they made it too, like, oh, it's just a personal thing you have to get over.
Yeah.
And like move on with your story, which is the main critique I saw that made people like hate the movie, or they thought it was like too meandering and too long and like didn't always land.
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely like, it was definitely like a good movie. And I don't know, I feel like the more times you watch it, the more there is to get out of it probably. Oh, I'd like to say I was really happy to see Tanisha Arnold in it.
Yes.
From Everybody Hates Chris.
We love her.
Love her.
My husband has three jobs.
Great.
That was my Tanisha Arnold
I haven't
impression.
Seen it. That was pretty good.
Thank
pretty
you.
Good. I haven't seen the show in so long, but I used to watch season 2 on repeat because we had it on DVD.
Oh.
As a child.
Yeah, I was really happy to see her too. And I thought that scene, I'm like not remembering it very clearly because it's actually been a while since I've seen it, but I feel like the one scene where she's like helping out like Jimmy with like the stuff he needs from storage or whatever, it was like pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Maybe misremembering.
Yeah, she like gives him all his dad's old stuff. And it was also interesting, they're like, he didn't lose... I assumed at the beginning of the movie that they lost the house because of property tax going up or something.
Yeah.
But I feel like they're insinuating that they lost it because his dad was dealing with addiction and then like lost the house that way, which was a bit more like, oh, interesting. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I really liked it. And I don't know. I'd like to see more movies that aren't just like black person struggles with this, or well, I guess Last Black Man in San Francisco, he's struggling with gentrification, but I mean, like, I'd like to see like more movies in the realm of this one that are a little bit less like literally like life or death or about processing some kind of like insane like trauma or something, because I feel like at that point, like, it's not really for me to watch if it's just kind of like trauma porn.
Yeah.
So
it's like either trauma porn or the most amazing successful person who's ever lived.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm not going through either of those
things.
Yeah. I'm not MLK.
Not Whitney Houston.
I'm not Whitney Houston. I'm just...
Yeah.
Just a girl.
Just...
Jimmy
I see
Fails
and
is just a guy.
Exactly. And
Phil is Mont.
One thing Isia sent me, actually, was that Jimmy Fails visited Vancouver.
Yeah.
And he's a big house fan.
And he posted my favorite house on his Instagram that's near my house. I was like, wow, of all the homes in Vancouver he could have praised, it was my favorite house. That's my house that I will be visiting.
It's your house.
And squatting in.
Cleaning up.
Once
yeah.
I get the chance and pretend I live there.
The cops won't be called on you, but they will be brought up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
So you can take solace in that. But yeah, I'd love to see more Jimmy Fail, more of Jimmy Fails. Obviously excited to see more of Jonathan
Majors. He's getting his big budget bag right now.
Yes, Creed 3.
Marvel movies.
Marvel.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I love him. I love them. I'd love to see just more like quirky, weird black people doing stuff, because could always take more. It definitely reminded me like of Atlanta a little bit. Maybe that's a little off, but I feel like it kind of gave like slice of life vibes, but there was like a hint of surrealism kind of thing. Would love to just see more of it. I think that's probably why it's one of my favorite movies, but yeah, pretty simple.
Awesome. Any closing statements for the show today?
Thanks for joining us, Ruby.
Thanks,
thank
Ruby.
You so
Ruby's
much
been
for
here the
yeah.
whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you so
listening
much for
in
letting
silence.
Me sit in on that. I feel so lucky that I got to listen to that conversation. Thank you.
But yeah, I don't know. This was really fun. Second episode of Fan Club. Really excited to see how the show progresses. Next week's going to be our Fun Drive themed episode, which will be fun. I don't know. What about you? I see any closing thoughts?
I would just like to say, I feel like I know you better now, Daniel, after seeing your favorite movie, which was The Point.
I feel like I know you a bit better, too. Yeah.
And I'm excited to watch more films that we really like and probably some that we will hate. Because those are both equally useful.
I think. Avatar 3 comes out, I'm dragging you to the theater. Opening night.
I'll definitely see it. I just will probably dislike
Puss
it.
Puss in Boots.
Yeah, Puss in Boots 2.
Yeah, let's all go see Puss in Boots.
I'm so serious. That movie impacted me. But yeah, maybe a Puss in Boots themed Shrek Cinematic Universe episode.
I love
it.
I'm down for that.
Works. Okay.
Anyways, thank you for listening to Fan Club. This is CITR 101.9 FM. Up next, I think we just got some ghost mix tunes, but at 4 will be Teachable Moments with Dora Duber. So you should listen to that because it's a great show. And we'll see you next week.